Welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Good morning, and welcome to another Community Conversations as we edge into the middle of December. I'm one of your hosts, Phil Huff, today again with my co-host, Julian. How is the season treating you?
Oh, Phil, hello. It's been treating me well. And we've had a little warm weather, a little cold weather. Winter seems to be threatening, but not here yet. Maybe by the time this recording airs, we'll have snow on the ground again.
Yeah, and as a reminder to folks, we are recording these a few days ahead. And in the Sandpoint area in December, that can mean quite a stark difference. Although we do know that the days are going to be shorter than they are today, and that the hours of darkness are long. And Julie, if you're going to get your skating in, you're going to have to get out real soon.
Well, Phil, this is a wonderful way to introduce our topic today. And that topic is about our area state parks, two of them anyway. And the first one is Round Lake and the second one is Farragut. And our guests are going to be the park managers, Mary McGraw and Liz Palfini. And I have to disclose, I've already seen Mary once today because on my usual hike around Round Lake this morning, who did I see but Mary with a big team of chainsaw logging guys working on what looks like a complete widowmaker. Did everybody survive, Mary?
We did. Actually, we got that down. Everybody was safe and we moved on and got a couple other trees too.
Way to go. Well, Phil, I'll tell you that the skating isn't looking good with the recent rains and the warm weather. Even me, a Minnesota native, is afraid to try and twirl around out on that ice.
I got to tell you, one of the things I love about Round Lake is you never quite know what you're going to get when you go. And two weekends ago, from the time we'll hear this, we went out and we saw beavers swimming across the main pond, getting some last minute willow in. And then the following week, we went out and went, who's that crazy person making those figure eight skating tracks by the docks? And the eagles were looking so forlorn because there's 2 inches of ice. And now I'm hearing it's all melted or melting.
Yes, it looks pretty scary out there. Well, let's meet our guests this morning. We're going to talk with Mary and Liz, and I would like it if you could each tell us just a bit about your backgrounds, how you came to be working with the Idaho State Parks, and how you came to be here up in the Idaho Panhandle. And we'll just start with you, Mary. You're the old pro.
Yes, I've been in North Idaho for about 23, 24 years. I've been with the state parks for about 33 or 34 years, coming on 34 years. Started out basically right out of college, moved to Idaho, to the wonderful place of Idaho, and started working for state parks in southern Idaho. Worked down there for about 10 years, moved to North Idaho, and found it to be very similar to what I grew up in and what I knew and loved. So I've been here at Round Lake for 24 years now, and I've been the manager for about five. So it's just a great place to be.
It's a great story and a long history at Round Lake. And we've got a newbie, though, which I'm going to now introduce, and we'll learn about her. And this is Liz Palfini. And Liz, you're the newest manager down at Farragut. Tell us about yourself, how you came to be here.
Yes, thank you so much for inviting me. I am very new to Idaho. I just moved up in October. I am a veteran state park person, though. I've been in state parks, Texas Parks and Wildlife specifically, for 12 years. And so I promoted up through that system over the last 12 years and decided that we wanted to kind of get a little wilder than Texas. And so we decided to try our luck in the great North Idaho area. And Farragut happened to be an opportunity that was available at the time. And so I interviewed for it and got it. So it's very, very fun so far. Everything is so welcoming and such a great park, such a great park.
Welcome to the neighborhood. We're actually surrounded by quite a few wonderful state parks and other public lands. And today we get to delve into both of these parks a little bit more in depth. So again, starting with Mary, tell us a little bit about the history of Round Lake State Park, how it came about.
Round Lake State Park actually started out as being privately owned. As a matter of fact, the visitor center that we are currently using as the visitor center, the building was actually a homestead built in 1926. So it won't be too long and it'll be coming up on its centennial. But the park itself was privately owned much through the 30s, 40s. 55, the Department of Lands actually bought the property from a private owner and developed it as a state park. State parks didn't actually exist at that time. So they had it for about 10 years, and they had the Department of Lands had a parks division, and they ran this area as a state park. And then in 1965, when the Department of Parks was developed, it immediately was turned over to the Department of Parks and has been operated through our agency since then. So, it's 5 years now. We had our 50th anniversary, but we got to celebrate our 60th at the time, and now we're at 65. So it is holding up well, and people still love it. And a lot of the activities that went on there then, back in the 50s and 60s, we're still doing now. So we just like to upgrade it and keep up to speed and let people enjoy the area.
Great history. Liz, Farragut is quite different though. Tell us about its history.
You're right. It's very, very different. Farragut is and was back in the 1940s a naval training station that housed lots and lots of naval cadets. It was almost a small city at that time. And so had everything in it, including hospitals and schools and homes and all kinds of fun stuff. So it was a really interesting place during that time period. And then transitioned after the Navy decided to let it go to a fish and game property in the 1950s. And during that time period, it kind of was mostly disassembled, right? So all of the older Navy parts and pieces were, you know, kind of taken out or removed and gone back to wild in most of the places. There are a few remnants. The brig, which is kind of in the middle of the park, was the jail back in the Navy days, and is still used as a museum today. And so there are a couple of little things that are left over, but essentially it went back to the wild. And when state parks came on board in 1965, it transitioned to a recreational park at that time and has been a recreational park ever since. And so it's a big place, 4,000 acres of space. And so lots of things to do at Farragut for sure. And lots of history. There's a lot of remnants of that naval station for people to explore when they come visit. It's kind of fun.
I think every time I've been there, I've seen a different face of that park. It just continues to amaze me how much diversity of activities and facilities and that there is one place.
I agree. I've only been here since October, and I swear every time I go out, I find something new and I'm like, wow, that's cool. You know, and it can be from any of the eras, 1940s, 50s, 60s, you know, whether it's Boy Scout era or Naval era, you get a little bit of history every time you walk at Farragut.
It was the location for, I don't remember which year, but one of the very large scouting jamborees was located there.
Correct. Yes. It was in the 1960s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much history. You've mentioned that Farragut was called a quote recreation state park, and I don't know what the definition of Round Lake is, but these are very different parks, Round Lake and Farragut. And a question that came to mind for me was, do state parks have in themselves in each park a mission or philosophy in terms of how they might be used or are intended to be used? Mary or Liz can answer that one.
Yeah, the department has a mission statement, which is to improve the quality of life in Idaho through outdoor recreation and resource stewardship, which that kind of defines both of the park's mission. There's a individual classifications for the different parks. Round Lake is classified as a natural area, natural park, whereas Farragut then is classified as a recreational area and is managed for the recreation. We also have classifications as such as cultural resources, managing the cultural resources, and another park in the north would fall under that, which would be the Old Mission. They are considered a cultural area. So the different parks are classified that way. So even being so close to Farragut, there's two different classifications, two different emphases as to how we manage the park.
Yeah, it's obvious too. They're really used differently and both in great ways. Phil, I saw your pen up. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it'd be really helpful to shift now maybe from the philosophical to let's do a rundown on each park and what's available, what kind of activities, what kind of facilities, what drives people to come visit. And again, Mary, why don't we start with you and then we'll move to Farragut afterwards.
Yeah, of course, in the summertime, we all know that there's camping and hiking and fishing and all that stuff. In the wintertime, it's a little bit different. One of the things we say is it takes on a whole different look. We do a lot of cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, fat tire bikes on the trails. It's a multi-use trail. We don't groom them for any one particular activities. They're all welcome to use them. We just ask all users to respect the trails for people that just love to come down and hike and walk their dogs, and you know, the trails are open for that. Probably the biggest draw in the wintertime is the ice fishing. So of course, and that's all winter dependent or weather dependent, whether we get enough ice to do that, how long the ice lasts. So ice fishing is a big deal here at the park. A little bit of ice skating, depending on how the ice holds up the temperatures. If we get really cold weather, get the nice hard ice out there without snow on top of it, the skating is great. Sometimes it lasts as little as 24 hours, and sometimes it will last, a couple of weeks. So it is interesting how fast that changes.
Now, I don't think I heard you mention, but I also think of sledding in the winter there. Do you still close off the front driveway and let people sled down that 1,000-foot ramp?
We do have sledding here. We do close the main entrance in the wintertime and have drive-in access through the campground. We do not groom that area. People sometimes do, if they can get the snowpack down and stuff like that, they will sled there. Most of the sledding activity is right at the end of the parking lot by the day-use shelter there, and it goes down towards the lake, which is a great area for, you know, younger kids, and you know, goes right down onto the ice. So a lot of it works out really well.
That's just the final run out if you get a good running start up by the guard shack.
That's right. Get a little jump there and you go.
That could get exciting, I think. Did we mention Nordic skiing? Because from time to time, I'm able to Nordic ski at Round Lake, but not all the time. There's not always quite enough snow.
That's true. We do have Nordic skiing around the the Stewardship Trail, the outer loop there. Like I said, we don't groom it, but when we get enough snow, it's a great trail to go on. It's about 3 miles. The problem with the snow is if we get a lot of snow, it works out good. If we just get enough to cover, we have a lot of big trees along this trail, and those trees grab all that snow, and then we get tree wells in there, so it makes it a little difficult. But if you can get out there and we get enough snow, it's a great loop to get out there and ski on.
There are some wonderful interpretive signs, educational opportunities at the park. Tell us a little bit about that whole program, how it stands alone too, and how you've integrated with certain community partners to explore education year round.
Yeah, we, in the wintertime, we partner with Friends of the Scotchman's Peak to do what's called the Winter Tracks. It sounds like this year with the online learning at the schools and stuff, they are going to continue doing that through online activities, and I'm working with them at this time to partner with them to do some online working, online learning with them in that. We also get some other groups coming in the wintertime. There's a Sandpoint local bike shop that usually comes out and does their Fat Tire annual event out here. This year we have not heard from them. I think with the COVID going around so rampant right now that everybody's being a little extra cautious. We are still in stage two of our recovery, which means no group activities. So that might be a little bit difficult, but we would encourage a lot of people to come out and do that. Spring and fall, we get some kids coming out to do some learning activities, learn about the trees, learn about tracking, maybe some orienteering. We also partner in the spring and summer with another group called the Selkirk Outdoor Learning Experience, and they're a great group to work with too. So there's a lot of educational opportunities. We have a lot of interpretive signs here in the park. We leave them up year round, so they're accessible. Talks a lot about some of the different agencies and how those areas are managed, how you can use some of these techniques to, if you have property, you can equate them to your property for fire management and stuff like that. So there's a lot of different learning opportunities that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a natural park, it really feels like a natural park. And these activities are so well suited to this type of park, especially for young people getting to know their environments, that kind of thing. Liz, when you tell us about Farragut, I have a feeling it's going to be quite a bit different, because I can just name off all kinds of activities that are a little more maybe recreational in nature. Shall we get started? There's quite a list.
It's quite a list. But, you know, I don't think that we're that different. We're in a different location, right? And so we do all the same things. We also have sledding and cross-country skiing and snowshoe, hiking while there's no snow, right? There's, Fat Tire bikes. We do groom our trails, though. And so we have very specific trails for specific users during the winter, especially. And so the cross-country skiers do have a course that is groomed for them. And then the north part of the park is open also for wintertime equestrian use. So we are bigger, right? So we have more space to spread out. And so we have the opportunity to allow a lot more user groups in at any one time. We also have boats because we're on Ponderay itself. The big lake doesn't freeze. And so we get boating all year round. And so people, if they can access the boat launch, then they're putting their boats out and fishing on the big lake. And so you see a lot of different people doing a lot of different things. you just pretty much, if you want to do something, you can probably find a place at Farragut that is appropriate for what you want to do. It's pretty magical that way.
When the snow conditions are right, the cross-country ski trails down there are probably some of the best in our area, especially for beginner to intermediate. And the fact that there's the segmented use and suggested flow of traffic means you can have quite a few people there and not run into a lot.
Right. And that's designed, right? And so we try really hard to help make that a great place to recreate during the winter. And hopefully we get fewer and fewer conflicts, right, between people by kind of spreading people out as best we can.
In summertime, if memory serves me right, there's a disc golf course there as well?
Actually, all year round. Believe it or not, we get disc golfers all year. We've got 5 disc golf courses. And so people are literally just golfing in the snow, which, you know, always blows my brain a little bit. But they love it. And so, yeah, it's definitely one of those year-round activities that I wouldn't have guessed was year-round.
I may have to make a statement about Frisbee golf. I just think it's great because the resource allocation for Frisbee golf compared to regular golf, you're not watering that all the time. You've got the chain link, whatever it would be called, hole. People just wander in rough grass and you can do it all year. You don't have to dress up and you don't need a big set of golf clubs. I think that's a great sport. And there are great courses there.
Now, there are also overnight facilities. And the overnight facilities require a reservation, I assume, or they walk in as well? Mm-hmm. How do people go about finding the best campsites?
Well, it really depends on the time of year, right? And so for Farragut, in the wintertime, it's a walk-in only situation. We do have cabins available, but you have to park on one side and you have to hike in to those cabins because the campgrounds that those cabins are in are actually closed for that. And so it's a different experience in the winter than you would have during the spring and the summer. But people love it, right? And so there are people who do camp at Farragut all year round. We do allow camping in Thimbleberry Campground during the winter. It's dry camping. And so people don't have electricity or water during that time. So they have to bring all that they would need with them, but they still camp. And so we get people, even in the dead of winter, who are, you know, out there enjoying the white north. But during the rest of the year, of course, you know, we've got camping all over the park and people in all of the different spots that you could camp in.
Yes, it's very well used. Well, there are more activities we haven't covered, though. Farragut has a shooting range, even.
Well, we don't necessarily, but the Fish and Game operates a shooting range that's connected to Farragut. So it is just off of Farragut proper. And so it's not actually part of the state park, but it is right next to us. And so you're right. Lots of folks that are in that area or even visitors will go out and utilize that range. And you can't beat, you know, $5 a day to shoot at the range is pretty reasonable. And so you'd see a lot of people using that space.
And the other thing that I've noticed from time to time is people with small planes, model planes or drones.
Yeah,
what is that? I'm not sure what that one is.
We actually call that Flyers Field. There's actually a whole section in the north part of Farragut that is a dedicated hobbyist space for people who operate miniature airplanes. And there is a club that helps maintain that area, and they call it Flyers Field. And they'll come out regularly and fly their planes. And so it is available for folks who want to do that particular activity, which is another just caveat that says, you know, we're big enough that we can accommodate a wide variety of different users for just an enormous amount of things. Right. That is kind of cool.
Is there anything else we've missed? I'm seeming to recall there was a zip line or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Tree to tree. You're right. Yeah. See, y'all know more about my park than I do.
We've been around a while.
During the regular season, right? Of course, it's not open during the winter time, but during our normal spring and summer, we do have a concessionaire, Tree to Tree, that operates a zip line high ropes course. They're in a section of the park. They do take reservations, and it's a very popular activity. And so folks have, you know, definitely come in to do that particular thing. It's really kind of fun.
Phil, I haven't tried it.
I've not tried it there. I have done some zip lining, and it can be incredibly exciting. So, yeah, a lot of fun. And in the trees, nothing would be better than that.
Right.
So we heard a lot about fires this summer, fires at the south end of the lake, Bernard Peak, close to the park, but it did not impact the park, did it? Just for listeners who might be concerned.
Correct. Like, the fire did not touch the park. We were impacted by smoke during the event, but the fires did not make it into the park itself. Right.
Okay. So tell us, is there anything new planned at either park? Mary, anything new coming at Round Lake?
Yeah, we have a couple of new projects that we're going to be working on. Right now, we have a volunteer in the park that's helping us work on some of the trails, clearing along adjacent to the trails to get some better views in the park, get some views from the lake and getting that cleaned up, making it look nice. We have a couple development projects coming up. One of the things that we've been working on is a resource management plan where we were worried about some of our very old trees that were mature or over mature. Of course, the storm this spring helped us out with that, getting rid of some of the older trees, opening it up. One of the things that we want to do is to maintain that shaded area in the campground. So the project that we're going to be working on is realigning some of our campsites, making them a little bit easier to get some of the larger trailers into, not necessarily making them bigger sites, but just making them easier to get into. And then putting in some living pads, defining the area in which the camper would occupy. And then we're going to go in and we're going to plant some more trees and get the forest growing so that when the trees that we have out there all come to the end of their stage, we will have continue to have a shaded campground area. Along with that, what we're hoping to do also is to expand our service sites, our electrical hookup and water hookups in the campground, making the whole what we call the upper loop all service sites. So that would accommodate trailers a little bit better. People really like to have that service, the electric and the water at the site, and we hope to be able to accommodate that. If we don't get that project going this year, we're hoping to get it going next year. But those are kind of our big projects that we have going on right now. Just kind of do some resource management, keep things looking nice, and try and help the campers to have a better experience.
I think it's worth telling our listeners a little bit about the, I'll call it new pavilion. It's been there only a couple of years. A lot of longtime users will remember the small pavilion that still exists down by the beach area, and it's a favorite place for families to gather. And now there's a second one, a newer one, a little farther up the hillside.
Yeah, we just opened that this year. I think it was about the end of May. Well, when we opened after the closure, in June, I think, is when it actually opened. It's a little bit larger shelter. It's great for day use. We rented out on a reservation type system where you can reserve it for the day. It sits just above the day use area, so you get views of the lake. You have access to the beach area, as well as visitor center and stuff like that. So it's great for family picnics and church outings and stuff like that.
Yeah, a nice addition.
It's real nice. And we still do have the other smaller shelter in addition to that. So that's always a good
thing. Very nice. Liz? Yeah, I love that old pavilion, and the new one's nice and sparkling, new and larger. So really nice for two different kinds of groups. There's one big change at the state parks, and I think that's the fee structure. Is that changing this year?
It sure is. Today was our opening day for the reservation system. And so we walked in, I know at Farragut, we walked into the telephones ringing off the hook to get their reservations for this year. Lots of changes. The first and foremost, of course, is that motor vehicle fee has increased to $7 across the whole state. And so that's a change for us across the board. I guess there's not much more. I mean, small things.
So I know as a longtime user of the parks, every year that you register your vehicle, you can get the added sticker for, I think it's $10. Has that changed, or is that still you get the $10 vehicle registration sticker that's good for all parks all year? It's one of the best deals around.
It really is, and that has not changed. And so folks can still pay their $10 and get into state parks all over. There is possibility that it may change in the future, but for right now, go get your sticker, pay your $10.
Oh my gosh, for $10 you can go everywhere any day, or you pay $7 each time you visit. People, get your annual permit,
use it twice, it's paid itself.
That's for sure.
Totally, right. Yeah,
well, yeah. Liz, tell us about anything new planned at Farragut for this year or upcoming years.
Sure. We actually are not planning any major giant, construction projects or big things. But we are planning a lot of subtle visitor experience things around Farragut. And so I'm hoping that in the next year, you'll see some new interpretive signs out on the trails in different places. You may see updates to existing interpretive things around the park. We would like to really focus on creating welcoming places for day users, especially there at Farragut. I mean, I think that's one of our biggest needs, is places for families to settle when they come to visit, when they're just coming for the day. And so you'll see some more picnic activity areas pop up here and there. And so it'll be fun to kind of go out and kind of see where we might have put those for you. It'll be kind of a scavenger hunt. I think it's a really big spot. So there should be lots of opportunity to give people some really nice areas to explore and settle into. And so that's going to be one of our focuses for this next year. We're also helping make the park a little bit more user-friendly. We did just finish an upper parking lot at the boat launch. Because the boat launch is so popular during the summer, we didn't have enough parking for the number of people who wanted to use that particular facility. And so we did expand the parking that's available. And so we're hoping that that will help protect the resource in that area. It'll help keep people parked in parking lots and not trying to park on the sides of roads and in places that shouldn't be parked on. And so we're trying really hard to make sure that we don't have situations where folks feel like they have to squeeze their car into just, you know, any spot they can find. And so, and we'd also like to not have to shut places down because we have too many people in them. So we're trying to look for opportunities where we can really spread people out, give them appropriate places to park, and everybody can enjoy the park even on those busy days.
It's great to see so many people also so many people presents challenges, and particularly in the last year with managing the risk from COVID exposure. So a couple, kind of a two-part question for each of you. What's the usual attendance and over the course of a year? Was it up or down this year because of COVID?
This year was quite the challenge. I was looking at our attendance numbers for this year, and you have to remember that we were closed for 60 days early in the spring for COVID, and we still have another month to go that we're still counting numbers for this month. And here at the park, the projected visitation is almost 125,000 visitors. Last year, we had 110,000 visitors. So with missing 3 months out of the year for visitation, when the park is typically closed, we're still that far ahead of in our numbers, which is unprecedented. Just a lot more day use, a lot of people using the area in the summertime, a lot more use in the what we would normally think of as the off season, the early spring, late fall. As a matter of fact, we have campers in the park right now. So, you know, the weather has held up for us, but people are looking to get out. They're looking to get out of the houses, to get out into the open areas and to be able to enjoy some of that without having to worry about maybe some social distancing, although we are encouraging people to social distance and to stay in small groups, but at least they can get out, they can see the environment, get some fresh air, and be safe. So the visitation here at the park has been unbelievable, a lot higher than we ever anticipated.
Yeah, that's amazing. Liz, how did Farragut fare?
We're in the same boat, and so literally we're probably up 20-25% this year. People got outside for sure. As soon as they had an opportunity, they were coming to state parks to do their exercise. People who had not been to state parks in years started coming out to state parks again. We heard it over and over again from our visitors. I haven't been here in, you know, so many years. And, you know, we just needed to get outside. And this is where we came. And so we definitely felt the impact of having those extra visitors this year. I don't know that any of us anticipated how busy we were going to be. But we were happy to see people, and, you know, it's our business and our mission for people to come out and enjoy the outdoors. And so it was wonderful to see people who hadn't been out in a very long time or people who had never come to a state park before. And so to see that kind of visitation was heartwarming for us in the business for sure. And so we were happy to see them.
I think that's really good news. And, you know, it's a sort of a boon for you, but it's also a boon for the area because you, of course, are funded partly by numbers of visits and fees, that sort of thing, and a little bit by the state, if I understand it. But it must have had an economic value for our region, which has been very much under stress, economic stress this year. Do you know anything about the economic benefits of the state parks on our region?
Yeah, we have in the past have had a study done to find out what the economic impact is in the area, the communities around the state parks. The updated numbers, I don't have anything within the last year or two, obviously, but one of the highlights was $1 invested equals $61 in return. So that's a pretty good return on the state parks.
Is there a stock? Can I buy that stock, please?
There you go. All we need to do is to get that sold.
That's right.
One of the things, you know, so it does help the communities. People are out there. They're going to some of the amusement parks. They're going to the festivals in town. They're just getting out, getting, you know, into the fresh air. But also, the nice thing is the parks are self-supported. Most of our money that we use to maintain the parks, to keep everything running, it comes from the users. So a lot of the money that we're getting has to come from the users to be able to maintain the parks. So that is, it's helpful to us. Of course, we have more things to maintain as we have more visitors, and that's kind of the fine line of, you know, deciding, you know, do we need to close off this area to protect it a little bit? Because the parks are here for generally a resource reason. You know, we want to protect an area, but we want to have people to come and recreate and enjoy the area also. So yeah, it's great for us. We're making a little bit more money. We're spending a little bit more money. The community is actually, you know, benefiting from it also.
So we're running kind of low on time left, but maybe we should finish off with some positive notes about what you like best about the job you have. Maybe, Liz, for what you're anticipating is going to be your best experience in the coming year. But what's the best thing about it? And then maybe highlight what you see as the biggest opportunity or challenge for 2021.
2021 will be very interesting. We never anticipated the things going on in 2020. So 2021, I am looking forward to just doing a lot more resource education, helping people to understand why we maintain the area like we do, to, you know, protect the lake, the woods, the trails, as well as help people to learn how they can help out also, through stewardship, through just education, just provide more education programs for the youth. We do a junior ranger program that's been extremely popular. It was cut back a little bit this year just because of the impact of COVID. We're hoping to get that program up and running. That is probably one of my favorite things being in the park, is to do some of the educational things, to see the spark in the kids' eyes when they discover different things going on around them every day. That's just something awesome to see.
That's a nice thing to have happen, Mary. That's a great attitude. I'm glad that you still have that spark and enjoy teaching the youngsters about your park and the environment. Liz, how about your upcoming goals and what you're enjoying, what's been best about working at Farragut so far?
Sure. I think I'm probably in the exact same vein as Mary as far as that goes. I think we're cut from the same cloth in our business. But we're in the people business more than anything else. And, you know, one of the things that I enjoy the most about working for state parks is interacting with folks who have come to love our state parks. And there's nothing better than hiking a trail and finding a family who are out there, you know, enjoying their day and just having a nice conversation about where they are and what they're seeing and what they love about what they're doing, and just sharing that moment with them. And I think we try to do that as often as we can. We have a lot coming at us. There's a lot of people, there's a lot of work that gets done, but we take the time to get out there and be with the people and enjoy the park that we care so much about. And so I think that's always my highlight. If I can spend a little bit of time on the trail with the people, then it always sparks me for the rest of the day. And anytime you can, you know, just kind of even watch them have fun in your park, it kind of re-energizes you about why you're there and why you care about this place and why we take care of it for them. And so we definitely look forward to seeing our visitors.
That's a great note to end on. And as we roll through the winter and come into the new season for big activity, especially in the recreation side of all the summer stuff that's going on in both parks. We'll have to have you back on the show and talk about your summer 2021 offerings. But thank you for showing today. And I think our listeners will really appreciate this in-depth look at both Farragut and Round Lake State Parks.
Thank you both. Thank you, Mary McGraw of Round Lake State Park and Liz Palfini of Farragut State Park. What great gems and resources in our own neighborhood. Thank you for joining us today. This has been KRFY Community Conversations talking about the state parks. Have a great week.
Well, this wraps up another community conversation. Thanks for listening to KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho and beyond. All of our programs can be heard live streaming on the web at krfy.org. And all of our community conversation shows are recorded and saved as podcasts on our website. KRFY strives to bring our community important local information. Currently, impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic remain at high levels across our state and region. In Idaho, we are at stage 2 level of restrictions and recovery. And Bonner County is currently at the red level, the highest level for risks of impact from the COVID pandemic. It is recommended we all follow the Panhandle Health District and government guidelines. If we help each other, we can get through this together. So let's be good neighbors and friends and protect each other. Please wear a mask in public, especially inside buildings and businesses, and keep a 6-foot distance apart from each other. Wash up and stay at home as much as possible, and stay home if you are sick. Stay safe, and thanks for listening. And before we close, we'd like to tell you about a new feature here at KRFY. If you'd like to see what song you have been listening to, you can go to our webpage or our Facebook page and find the playlist link. Then you can see the song you just heard. Until next week, enjoy all of our great programming, including Otto's Eclectic Mix, all day long.